Okay, I guess we are ready to start. First of all, I want to thank you all for coming to this late session. It's the last session of the day, and hopefully I will see you at Ask the Experts as well, that will follow this session right after at about 6:30. And I'm really excited to be here to talk about Link Mobile and Enterprise Voice and five best practices for that. This is a topic I really love, and I spend much time talking about this topic with customers, because there is a mind change that needs to happen in order for them to succeed with Link Mobile. If you want to ask questions, I have set aside some time in the end of the session, and there is a microphone here, so when you ask a question at the end, please raise your hand and you will get a microphone. And you should pay attention as well, because there will be a pop quiz in the end. Yay. And prizes, like access to the Office 365 party. That's an awesome prize, right? So last week, Gartner published a magic quadrant for corporate telephony. Did anyone read it? No? So Gartner is an independent company that analyzes technology and technology trends. So each year they publish a magic quadrant for each technology and technology trend. And this year, Microsoft were actually in the leader quadrant of the magic quadrant for corporate telephony. So this is the first time Microsoft have been in the leader quadrant for telephony. And what they measure is the uptake in the organization and amounts of seats in an organization that uses Link and other systems for telephony. So you have this other magic quadrant as well for unified communication, but this one focuses only on voice. And what's interesting is that they highlighted that the Link Mobile client is a client that works on several operating systems like Microsoft, Apple, and Android, and is a strong solution for those enterprises seeking a unified communication and telephony client for their mobile devices. So it's not just Microsoft and we Link people that likes the mobile client, but it is a good solution if you want to consider it for unified communication and telephony. But they also highlighted a caution, and the caution is that clients report that they talk to report poor call quality, dropped calls, and system outages in implementations that didn't use a Link integrator. So when starting to use Link for telephony, and especially on wireless and mobile devices, you really need to think about the expectation of users, and they expect this to work flawlessly, of course. And you need also to be aware that most of the clients that will run Link from now on, is my understanding, that more and more will be over the wireless network. And you even have laptops now that don't have an Ethernet plug, but you will have mobile devices and tablets and wireless devices that will use Link over the wireless network. And the users expect this to work because they use it at home, it works at home, and they are used to having their devices connected and doing Link video and audio. So the trends that drives this is, of course, bring your own device and choose your own device. And what we want to avoid is the bring your own disaster, right? So we want this to work for those who implemented bring your own device anyway. So here I have a picture of a happy user. It's me. I'm always happy when linking. And users expect good performance in meeting spaces as well. So here I'm doing a meeting with my tablet, and you can see that it doesn't have an Ethernet plug, and the Ethernet plug is right there. It is in the room, but I can't use it. So this actually was a meeting room where the Ethernet plug was there. There's many meeting spaces I've seen that doesn't have an Ethernet plug even. But when we succeed, look how happy users are. Link is a feel-good product, right? And when you succeed with Link, you get so happy. And there were actually a study made by the University of Warwick this February where they found that happy user is actually more productive, 10 to 12% more productive than unhappy users. So having them using Link, being happy, maybe they'll be more productive. Who knows? But you also need to be aware of that users consume the network in a different way today than they did yesterday. So there was a study made that showed that users are using their devices to access email, text messaging, and searching the internet, of course. And more are also using videos and movies. There's a trend over the internet that more and more interactive movies will be released. And you also will have on Facebook and YouTube more video streaming. And the problem here is that the video streaming and the way users use the network takes up more bandwidth than before. And we also have this exponential increase in the amounts of devices the users connect to the network. So that's why what we did until now, we can't do moving forward. We need to take into account how users will consume the network. So my goal for this talk is to help you meet mobile users' expectations. So I defined 5 best practices that you can consider. They are optional, but not really. So first off, I want to talk about the technology, to understand the technology. So know how mobile media flows. The second, I want to talk about doing unmanaged devices correct, because most of those devices you're using Link Mobile on is typically unmanaged devices. They're not part of your domain, and they're not easy to take into your security fold. And then, of course, optimize Wi-Fi for Link. That's a really important topic, and I'm going to touch into how you can do that. And then evaluate security and authentication for the Link Mobile platform so you can have your users use your corporate network for corporate telephony and at the same time use the same security principles you have defined for your domain joined computers and other software. Then, of course, at the end, I want to touch into SDN and software-defined networking and why you should care about that. So I'm not going to deep dive into it because there was a talk yesterday by Jamie Stark that really dove into what you get with SDN, but I want to give you the essence for you to understand why SDN actually is a good thing. Sounds interesting? Yep, got some slow nodding here. That's epic, right? So I'm from Norway. And in Norway, when I just get this little nod, it's like through the roof. So thanks for that. So who am I talking about this? Well, my name is Ståle Hansen, and I am a chief technical architect at Knowledge Factory, and I'm based in Oslo in Norway. So here you see a picture of our office. We are quite proud of that. We build a new skyline in Oslo now, right beside the Opera House, if you have heard about it. So it's a good tourist place. I've been working with Enterprise Voice Project since 2008, since Office Communication Server R2 came out, and you could do conferencing and stuff like that. But I've been working with similar products since 2006. You can catch me on the UC Architects podcast, where we talk about Link and Exchange and what's working and what's not working and news. And I also have this blog, msunified.net. If you want to tweet about this session, feel free to do that. And my Twitter handle is at Ståle Hansen. And you can use the hashtag Link TEE, for LinkTechEd Europe. So let's start with know how Link mobile media flow works. And I had an epiphany when actually creating this talk and really understanding why the client behaves like it does. So when the mobile client signs in, it will, of course, auto-discover Link Discover internal, and then Link Discover. And that's just the record it will discover. It will not use the zip.domain.com. It will not use an SRE records. It will only use these two A records. So no fallback to legacy auto-discover methods. And Link Mobile is a UCWA device or client, which means that it will sign in through your web services and do SIP or HTTPS through those web services. But the thing is, with the mobile client, it will always be an external client. It will always sign in to the external web services records, which means that when you do Link Discover, you get presented with the pool you're part of and the web services, internal and external, but it's hard-coded to use the external records for signing in. So what does this mean? Well, I tried to create some drawing here, and when you have an internal mobile client, it will auto-discover, and if Link Discover points to your front-end pool, it will talk to the front-end pool and get returned the external web services for that pool. And then it will sign in on your external web services through your reverse proxy, and then through the firewall, and into the external part of the web services residing on the front-end server. That means that the Link mobile client is always external. It acts as an external client, and you also need to make sure that the Link mobile clients can resolve the external web services record, the public address, and then be able to reach that through firewall and connect to the external reverse proxy. So this is the sign-in process. But how is the media path going when you use Enterprise Voice on the mobile client? Well, it signs in, of course, through the reverse proxy. But when calling the mediation server, the media will go directly to the mediation server or through the front-end server if you have co-located the mediation server there, and out on the PSN gateway and out on the PSN switch network. So your media stays internal even though it signs in external. What happens if there's a firewall between the front-end server or the mediation server where you don't have direct connectivity and probably the mobile client is in its own separate network where you put all your unmanaged devices? What happens then? Well, it signs in externally, and then media will flow through the external leg of the AV edge server and then go through the firewall and to the mediation server, and then out on the PSTN network. So this is something you really need to be aware of, because this is not an optimized media path for the Link client. And the reason for it not going through the internal leg of the edge server, like all internal clients does, it's because it always acts as an external client. So this is a typical behavior for external clients. So if you have two Link computers at your home, they are signed in as external users, and they will do direct connectivity on the media if they have the chance. So this is how it was in the previous drawing. It will do direct connectivity if it can. But if it can't, it will go through the external edge server like all other external clients will do. So So this is important in terms of knowing how to design for an optimal media path for a Link mobile client. And then the Link mobile client also needs to be able to resolve the AVH FQDN externally so it can actually send traffic to that server. So some words about Link Discover internal and certificates. Because when you have those unmanaged devices and you're using internal public key infrastructure and using certificates you have provisioned yourself, these clients typically don't trust your root certificate authority. So what happens? What's the signing experience for mobile clients that don't trust the internal CA if you are using Link Discover internal and pointing it to your front-end pool? So the iOS client will, that's the iPad and iPhone client, will sign in fine. It's no problem. Works great. The Android client will give you a warning, but you can OK it, and then you never see it again. But the Windows Phone client will not be able to sign in because it stops by not trusting the certificate authority. So if you want, if you are using internal public key infrastructure and have a certificate authority that the clients don't trust, then maybe you should point Link Discover to your reverse proxy. Because there you have a public certificate and they are able to sign in fine. So what's the consequence of pointing Link Discover externally? Well, of course, all clients, first time they will log in, will hit the Link Discover and will resolve it externally. But that only happens once. And the information going over there is just the pool information and the addresses, internally and external, and also the UCVA traffic. So, but that's something you can consider, or you can use an internal proxy in order to have a public certificate assigned to that internal proxy. But then again, if you want users to succeed with your mobile clients, then you need to be aware how the signing experience is and also how media flows. So hopefully you know that by now. So the next topic is, so my second best practice is do unmanaged devices correct. So what do I mean by that? Well, we are talking about access and placement. So how unmanaged devices access your network and how they are placed within your different networks. So you have your corporate network. You have your domain join clients. They are, of course, in your internal network, connected through either their own SSID for wireless or through the Ethernet. And they have access to the internal services like Link, Exchange, and SharePoint, and ERP systems, and whatnot. And then you have unmanaged devices that you have created a separate SSID for, where they are actually placed outside your network. Because, of course, they are unmanaged devices. They shouldn't be treated as internal clients. Well, the problem with that is that will not give us an optimal media path. It will go, you will have less control over the quality of the media for Link Mobile and other unmanaged wireless devices. So by putting them on the internet, you actually have no control, even though the devices are consuming your internal network. So my suggestion here is to define a separate network that you can place and manage devices in, where you actually give access for the specific Link front-end server or mediation server, where you can do media direct connectivity. And also provide good connectivity to other services you have, like the productivity suite from Microsoft with Office and Exchange and SharePoint. And maybe publish other applications through published applications or virtual desktops to give these unmanaged devices, the tablets, the mobile phones, access to the corporate network in a good and secure way. So how can we do this? How can we make sure that the users can connect correctly? Well, my suggestion here is to use policy-based access. There are several tools available to do that today, and they can place your users and give them access to different networks based on how they authenticate, like your email address and password, and what they are connecting with, if there is iOS, which you support, or Windows Phone, which you don't support, if it is an iPad and whatever. And also the OS version and how up-to-date it is. Also, you can do it by time. You can do it from where they are connecting and how they are connecting, wired or wireless. And by using this policy-based access, you can permit client, deny client, quarantine them, redirecting to the correct network, do bandwidth management, and optimize media paths. So even though you have one user, he will access the network the same way, but depending on what kind of client he accesses the network with, he will get different kind of access to your network. So he shouldn't get full access to your internal network by plugging in his Ethernet cable on his home computer that he brought to work, because that's also an unmanaged device. So by using policy-based access, you are able to place and have control over how these clients connect to your network based on what kind of device they're connecting from. So an example here is ClearPass from Aruba. I want to show you a bit how they think about onboarding and network authentication. This is just an example, of course. There are several products that can do this in the market. The thing about ClearPass, it works with both Aruba and Cisco and Meru and Juniper or whatever. So it's just a software to do policy-based access. So how it works? So I had this Aruba guy come down and show me how he connected. So he logs on to the SSID. And after connecting to the SSID, he will authenticate with his username, email address, and password. After being able to connect to this network, he will be presented a web page. So here he waits for still connecting. When he's connected, he logs on to a web page and gets presented the onboarding portal. And here you can install the root certificate if you want. And this is a root certificate that's separate from your public key infrastructure. It's a certificate for ClearPass, because you can use this certificate in order to authenticate the user the next time he logs in. So he authenticates to ClearPass, which of course integrates with Active Directory. And now it takes a look at what kind of device you are in, what kind of user, what kind of access you should have. And here you can, okay, this is a mobile client we support. Give him access to link. So he installs this profile. And the thing about ClearPass, if the user changes password in Active Directory, he still are able to log in without changing a password on ClearPass, because it uses certificate-based authentication after you have logged in for the first time. So if you have users that either you want to revoke devices or you want to not disable AD account, but disable corporate network access, you just go into ClearPass and revokes his access without doing anything with Active Directory. So at the end, you can see that he was able to onboard the network, be placed in the correct network, and the sign-in process was not something the user was tasked with the first time he signed in. So this is an example how the end user experience could be in such a situation. So how about mobile device management for a Link Mobile? So I actually got this question on the Link booth, how you can push out the Link client through mobile device management. Well, Microsoft doesn't provide any installs you can push out. You can't pre-configure the Link mobile client either. So it's actually best distributed through the online stores because it is frequently updated and it always uses automatic discovery in order to log in. Of course, you can type in the address, but the preferred way is using Link Discover. So there is no real path for using MDM for Link Online other than, of course, pushing out certificates and other stuff. So my third topic here is optimized for Wi-Fi for Link. Because we are talking about access and the quality of that access. So typically, Wi-Fi is deployed for access where you have where you've been going around in the office with a computer and measuring signal strength. When the signal strength gets poor, you put up a new access point, and then you have a good coverage of the office. But that doesn't mean the Link performance is okay for that network, because it depends on how the wireless network is used, how many devices are there, and how the network is consumed. So what are the Wi-Fi problem areas? Well, Wi-Fi is a shared medium, so you can't dedicate anything to any application, or you can't put aside something in the wireless network. And many wireless networks are also based on the 2.4 gigahertz band, which is have good coverage, a good signal strength, but it is limited to only three channels, and the speed is also slower. And it was typically designed for non-real-time data usage, so not for voice, but it was deployed for access. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong about that. But that means when you have to do something about the wireless network. So what are the suggestions? So I talked to Aruba, I talked to HP, I talked to Cisco, and asked, how do you work around this? Well, the first they said, they implement quality of service in the wireless network. They do deep packet inspection in order to guesstimate if this is a Link voice call or a Link video call. And they tag that traffic with the correct DHCP value. Because your wireless network is probably the bottleneck of your network. And of course, they said you should try to move to 820.11n and the 5 GHz network. The 5 GHz network actually have a shorter reach, but it has more channels to put traffic in and more throughput. And of course, the new network, 820.11ac, which have bigger, better throughput. So, and there are more clients supporting AC as well moving forward. And then I said you should deploy access points where the users are. So if you have a shared workspace where you have 50 users, you need to think about the amount of devices that connect within that space and how many access points should support that. Because one access point may support up from 20 to 60 concurrent sign-ins. And if these 50 users have three devices each, or two, or more, well, by just signing in, the access points will be overloaded. So you need to think about where the users are, how many access points you should put in there, and you also need to think about where the users move. Because when using mobile and wireless devices, users probably want to answer a call and then move to a meeting room, a silent room, or move away from where they are. So we need to deploy throughput and access where the users will go as well. And meeting spaces, and maybe where the steps are, where users will move between places. And they also said we need to have faster inter-access point handover. So what does that mean? Well, it means that you need to have shortened down the time before one access point hands over the connection to the next access point. Because by default, this handover is quite long, up to 1 minute. And during that 1 minute, when you leave one access point and go to the next, the link call would have dropped. So you get dropped calls. So you need to have fast access point handover, and you also need to design for sticky clients. So a sticky client is a mobile client, typically, that will try to hang on to the access point it was originally signed into as long as it possible can. So you need to have software that can force the clients to switch access points. Because that's the way that the network cards on the mobile accounts were designed. They were designed for access and not thinking so much about the quality of that access. But now we care. So it means you need to have end-to-end quality of service in your network. You shouldn't just do quality of service in your wireless network. You should also do it in your wired network and in your wide area networks. So how does the media flow go when you use quality of service in the wireless network? So here I have a mobile client that tells the link front-end server, I want to make a call. My name is Alice, I want to call Bob. So we have the traffic going to the nearest access point, of course. And then it will go through the controller, the wireless controller. Because in order for quality of service to work in the wireless network, the traffic needs to go through the controller so the controller can prioritize that traffic. And this means that you need to think about the placement of the controller as well. Because many customers I talk to have a centralized placement of their wireless controllers in their data center, but they do have many departments and branch offices that are not near that data center. So sending the media traffic to the data center and back for each call is not optimized media path. So then you need to think about how can I put my controllers nearer my user or closer to my users. So that's also a design principle you need to think about. And if you talk to the wireless vendors, they are aware of this. And the quality of service needs to be there from end to end. So part of this is going through the wide area network, and parts of this are going through the local area network. So having an end-to-end quality of service is important. And there's one other thing. If you lose your Wi-Fi, the call will get dropped. It will not be handed over to the cellular network. The call will get dropped, and then you can reconnect again when you have switched platform. So that's also somewhere you will get a dropped call, if you're not aware of this, or you don't have coverage, Wi-Fi coverage, in the spaces the users move. So users will notice. So how can we make sure that we do quality of service correct? You can validate your Wi-Fi network with a third-party company called Ixia. Ixia is actually used by Microsoft to certify the wireless vendors for link and optimization of link traffic. So they have software that they can run on clients, and they have a server-side software that would analyze the traffic. So they have this discovery phase in order to find out how you want to use your wireless network, what you use your wireless network for today, so understand what kind of modalities you want to use. And then, of course, they have this modeling phase. And then we see you have them going through a traffic simulation. And then, of course, you get a report that tells you that end-to-end call to service did not work, or we discovered a switch that was overloaded, or we found out that your wireless network is not optimized for link, or we found out that the job you've done in optimizing for link was good. Now we know how this will work. We don't have to guess. So how do they validate the network? Well, they actually put some clients on a tray, and they install the software that simulates link traffic, if it's video or application sharing or voice. And then they go around in the building measuring the traffic. And you probably should do this during work hours as well, when the users are there, so you get good readings with real data. And then they create this map and show you how link performed in the different areas. And this is a good way to analyze, change, and then do a new analysis in order to see if that worked. So here's a tool I recommend in order to validate your wireless network for link voice. And of course, you should test with the clients you have decided to use. So if you allow iPads and Windows tablets and Windows phones, well, you should test with those devices. Because the throughput and antennas and drivers are different across those devices. So it may work good for a laptop, but it doesn't work for a mobile client, for instance. And then we are over to the fourth topic, which is evaluate security and authentication. Because when we want to use our devices and we want to have them access corporate software and corporate services, we want to bring them into our authentication fold. And if we decided that two-factor authentication is the thing, well, Link should support that as well. And if we want to do passive authentication, well, we should do that on Link and Exchange as well. So the challenge here is that, first off, the Link client needs to authenticate directly. So when going from as an external client, it will go through the reverse proxy, and the reverse proxy will not do any pre-authentication. So the authentication is done by the front-end server in your internal network. And one other challenge we have is that when you do two-factor authentication from Microsoft, the way that they provide it in Link, it will break Exchange. Because the Link clients, including the mobile client, will authenticate directly to Exchange web services. But when deploying two-factor authentication, it is not able to authenticate to Exchange web services. So you will lose Exchange connectivity. So how does native two-factor authentication work? Well, it's supported by Windows Phone 8 and iOS clients, so no Android. And it works only with Link, so it breaks Exchange. For Link mobile client, that means you won't get a meeting tab working, you won't get conversation history, and you won't get voicemail access. But you do actually get the unified contact store that you have with Exchange 2013, because that is accessed through the Link server. So if you want to do pre-authentication in the DMZ as well, Link today is not built in that manner, which means sometimes you have seen companies not deploying the reverse proxy and thus not deploying Link Mobile. But there are third parties that can do this now, and they can do restrict sign-in to select the devices, authenticate specific devices, and do lockout on others, and use dedicated link mobile passwords that support two-factor authentication or passive authentication, and still have it working with the link client and exchange client, so you don't have to compromise on functionality. So there's a couple of vendors available that can do that. So you have PointSharp, you have Link Solutions, and Link Shield. That does increase the security for web services on mobile clients and also for the desktop clients. So I wanted to give you an example how PointSharp does this, which is a new offering that is available. And they have the secure link reverse proxy. So they do actually have security mechanisms where you can pre-authenticate in the DMZ. For those web services, you can use app-specific passwords, device control, and you can do two-factor authentication. So how does that work? Well, you have, instead of using a other reverse proxy, you will use the PointSharp reverse proxy, and you also need to have a gateway server in your internal network. So the PointSharp server will either use app-specific passwords, they will do pre-authentication, and they will be able to do device lookout. So by implementing such a solution, you are able to do pre-authentication and two-factor authentication for Link as well, and still have Exchange working. So they support both Exchange and Link. So you still see the media flow is untouched. It will go through the Edge server for external users and direct connectivity for internal users, if they are placed in the correct network. So actually, I had them create some videos for me to show you the end user experience. So here we have the two-factor authentication example. First, they type in the app-specific password. That could be your AD password or something specific for the mobile client. And then the one-time password. You sign in. And the feature set is the same for a native link client, and Exchange web services works. So that's important because we're talking about users' expectations and end user experience. So they need to have a good experience in order to succeed with this kind of solution. So here's an example for having an approved device and an unapproved device, that the same user are able to log in to multiple devices, but are only approved to log in on one device, which means that I have provisioned my device, which I can log into. If I borrow your device to sign in to Link Online, I am not allowed to. So you get this awesome message that you have an unknown error on the device that is not approved. And then you can have an email go to the administrator that the administrator can approve the access on that device, and then you have onboarded a user with a new device. But this is just examples, so you decide yourself how you want to have this done. Great?
Yay.
Okay, my last topic is software-defined networking and why we care. What's so awesome about this? Did anyone attend Jamie's session yesterday? Yeah? Some of you? Great. So why should we care about SDN? So we have our example with the optimized Wi-Fi traffic. So we have Alice telling the Link server, I want to make this call. I want to call Bob, I want to do audio, and I also want to do video. And the Link server knows this, and will send that information through the SDN API to the controller. So now the controller knows with 100% certainty that there's going to happen an audio call here. It's a link call. And I'm being told to optimize that traffic and tag that traffic with the correct taggings and markings. So now he knows. Alice and Bob are completing their call. And when they have completed the call, information goes back to the front-end server about how the experience of the call was. And even call metrics are sent to the controller. So after the call is finished, you will send monitoring data over, most scores, and how the user experienced the call to the controller. So now the controller knows after the call was completed how the experience was, what the quality was, and will break out into UCC scores, which are a score from 1 to 100, which is based on most score and network quality score and Wi-Fi score to give the call a number. But there's another effect here as well. We are empowering the network administrator to know how Link performs in the network. Because my job as a consultant, I spend most of my troubleshooting time on proving how the network is underperforming. That's my primary job. I spend a lot of time on this. But the point here is that here the network administrator will get the diagnostics header of a failed call, will get the most score, so they know how Link performs without having access to Link itself or understanding Link. So we are actually empowering the network administrator to do his job in a better way and also have quality of life in terms of knowing how things are performing. So here is a chart that compares heuristics versus SDN API. So heuristics is about the deep packet inspection and tagging of the traffic versus SDN, where you have the controller knowing what kind of modalities are going over. So I want to highlight a few here. So you can also do classification and prioritization of desktop sharing and file transfer. That's something you can't do if you just do deep packet inspection. So you get the opportunity to optimize more modalities using the SDN API. And then, as I said, you receive end-to-end quality metrics like the most score, and even better, the diagnostics header from a failed call. Because when we troubleshoot, we are looking for a diagnostics header in order to see why the call failed. And often it is telling you that it failed because there were no connectivity for the clients, or when you have an external client, internal client, it doesn't work, or something like that. So this is a good data, and again, we are empowering the network administrator. And then you can, of course, do the real-time quality analysis, and you get this UCC score. So this is an Aruba thing, the UCC score, where you have a good measure of how the call was and how it performed in your network. And of course, 100% accurate identification of all Link traffic. That's quite awesome. Yeah? No? Okay. So, because when you do a heuristic approach, it's a guesstimate. I'm guessing this is Link traffic based on its properties, and hopefully I am doing this correct. But with the SDN API, he knows. So here's a screen dump of the Aruba view, where you get cake diagrams. Nothing is better than doing analytics with cake diagrams, right? Then you have all the good information. It's good consumable, right? No? Okay. Well, and then you also get, in the upper corner, you also get the UCC score and the placement of all the calls and how they performed in your network. And preferably, they should be up in the upper greener corner in terms of both signal strength, quality of the network, and the experienced score in link. And you also get to know what kind of traffic and what kind of clients are using your network. So it is good feedback for the network administrator to know how things work and as early as possible improve or change the network to the better. So what about when you don't have the SDN API accessible for guest networks, for instance? Well, you can combine it and use heuristic approach for guests because you are this awesome company and you want Link to succeed either if you are a guest or an internal user. Then you can optimize the Wi-Fi part because Wi-Fi is the bottleneck of our network. So, but we want Link to succeed and not YouTube in the same way. And then you have Link Online or hosted Link where you still want to have a good experience when you are in the office. Well, then you can also use heuristic discovery in terms of optimizing your internal network. Typically, you have a good bandwidth to Link Online, but if your internal wireless network is not good enough, well, the experience will not be as good as the user are expecting. So if you want to do a heuristic approach, then you can use a virtual controller that can be implemented on the access point. They have some products that can do that now. But if you need to do the SDN API, then you need to have a hardware controller. So that was actually the end of my talk. So I want to recap here. And now is the pop quiz, right? Are you ready? That's awesome. So, we should know how Link Mobile Media Flow works. So anyone have any idea how Mobile Media Flow works? Through the edge? Yes, who said that? Back there? Here's your access to the party. Sure, thanks. And also, you should know that the mobile clients are always external clients. They will do direct connectivity if they can. If they can't, it will go through the edge. So how do we do unmanaged devices correct? Yeah, policy-based. That's correct. Here we go. Thank you, sir. Great. So we'd use policy-based access and place them in a network where we are able to optimize the traffic. Okay, next one. How do we optimize Wi-Fi for Link? Yes, back there. Sorry.
Quasi over the Wi-Fi?
Yes. Perfect. So I'm going to run back to you. So you have quality service over Wi-Fi. And of course, you need to rethink how we deploy the access points, the controllers, and how the handover between access points are handled. Okay, next one. Authentication. Can we do two-factor authentication natively in Link? Yes. But will it break Exchange? Yes. So, point. That's a good answer. So,
oh, thank you. I already got one.
You already got one? Okay. But so for security and authentication, you should think about it and make sure you have the user experience in mind, so don't break Exchange, right? Okay. Why should we care about SDN? It's great. Okay, that's a good answer. Was it, who was it? Back here? Oh, you already got it? Oh my God, guys. So, okay, another tip why we should care about SDN.
Optimize media flow.
Yes. Here we go, sir. Optimize media flow. And I actually have one more axis. So, what do we achieve by using SDN? Yes, 100% certainty and good quality of life for the network administrator. Here you go, sir. Could you give to the first guy this card that got the wristband? Okay. So my goal here today is to help you understand how you can meet mobile user expectations. And the main takeaway here is optimize your Wi-Fi for link. That's the most important part in order to do this. And of course, then we should know how things work, how we can do it, and also make sure that we can do direct connectivity. But if we don't optimize the Wi-Fi, well, maybe we shouldn't do Link Mobile, right? It's that important. So Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi. And I have time for questions.
Okay, sorry, I was a little bit quicker. Anyway, I want to ask about this Wi-Fi and combination of old-fashioned QoS and this SDN. If you deploy only SDN, is it possible to not configure anything else on the QoS side? Because I'm no Wi-Fi expert, but I still think that if you deploy this SDN, then the first point that where you can actually influence and tag the traffic is on the network element, not at the client station.
That is correct. So with SDN, you will get to know what kind of traffic it is, so you don't have to tag it in forehand for link, because it's done by the networks. That's software-defined network. That's what it's about, so yes. One other question.
Could you possibly go back to the slide of the Aruba...
screenshot?
Yeah, please. That's the one.
This one? The cake diagrams?
Yeah, so yes. We're using Aruba for our wireless, using Link. And we get exactly what you've got up there, which is a lot of unknown calls. So it's not 100%. We don't know, well, pretty much what your percentage is of what those calls are doing.
Yeah.
I spoke to Aruba, and they didn't know why we were getting that. And obviously, you're getting it too. Do you know why?
That they are placed in here, or?
But no. On the call quality?
Yeah.
You see, a lot of that pie chart is gray.
Yeah.
As unknown.
Yeah. So I'm not sure, okay. Really.
I was hoping that was your system and you knew about it.
Sorry. There's a question in the back first.
On your first diagram, one of the first diagrams where you show the mobile client connecting directly into the front-end server.
Yeah.
Are you making a compromise between security and quality there, or is there some way of actually maintaining your security? Because it kind of, on one of the earlier presentations about security by design, it shows multiple ways of, so that one there.
Yeah.
You're obviously saying, implying there's no firewall there, or there's no edge server, or no reverse proxy. By standard design principle, wouldn't you put the edge in and expect it to connect through to the edge? So is that your trade-off of, it won't work as well or it won't work as fast, but you'll be more secure if you go through the edge.
So, if the traffic goes through the edge, it's more secure? Well, I don't believe so, because the link traffic is secure by design as well. And the problem with that is you then can't optimize the same way for the traffic. And you should, it's not big difference having the traffic go through the edge, and the edge is not designed for handling all your internal calls. So I don't think that is a good approach, really, to have everything go through the edge server.
I think the question was probably, how are you actually publishing, how are you actually exposing the front-end server out to the mobile client? if it's actually properly external, or is that diagram showing internal Wi-Fi in the connection?
Yeah, this is a Wi-Fi where the client are able to access.
Okay, so you're talking about corporate Wi-Fi internal on the network rather than... Okay, cross-purposes, I was thinking of external, fully external and...
No, this client is fully internal.
Okay, yeah. All right, sorry, thank you.
Okay.
And asking another question, which is kind of related to the last one. Your slide where... Oh, I was just going to say, if you could go back to your slide.
Sorry, The
one with had the... The one with the two circles with the internal domain and then the external.
Yep.
Yeah, that one. Okay. So what would you have to allow to get the link clients on the unmanaged network through to the domain joined without going through the edge server?
You need to allow the media port range that the mobile clients use. So you define that in the QoS settings on the link server. And it doesn't have to be a big range either. It could be a 24-port range. So that's the range you need to have because the link clients are running connectivity checks when they do decide how to do media. And then they will try to connect to directly to the server using the port range it has been given.
But am I right in saying that if that client tries to talk to say a domain-joined internal client, isn't that media path direct and bypasses the server if it can?
Yeah, it will do peer-to-peer for clients as well.
So in that scenario, would you allow those ports to everything or just the link server? Because would the call not fail?
You should for, of course, the scenario here were more a PSTN scenario, which goes through the mediation server.
Yeah.
But of course... I would like to have this traffic go to all the subnets where you have clients because then you can do peer-to-peer and then it will be optimized. So, but you need to, of course, evaluate that from a security perspective, but from an end-user perspective, you should do that.
Okay. I guess, do you have a document outlining, because presumably you'd need different ports for the call setup and that kind of stuff and different ports for... sharing of screen sharing and that kind of stuff too. Do you have, is that documented anywhere?
Yeah, it's very well documented. And it was actually a talk, I think that was yesterday as well, about bandwidth management and quality of service. So they went through all the settings you need to have in order to configure the port ranges and separate audio and video from application sharing and so on. Yes, it's wait for the microphone, thank you.
Response groups and mobile client.
Yeah, I think not it supported.
Yes, I know. But there are some rumors on the internet that says that with Windows Phone, it works. Is this true or?
Yeah, it's still not supported, but I also have heard that it may or may not work on some clients.
Yeah.
But that's not intentional.
Don't do it. Huh?
So don't do it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So another question back there.
You mentioned that for the Wi-Fi access point, the Wi-Fi access point should be well thinked and well planned and well designed. I mean, I'm not a Wi-Fi expert. For me, it just means that we should have enough bandwidth. But I think that it's not so easy. And my question is if you can give a bit few details, what do you mean by saying that it should be well designed and well planned?
Yes, so I'm a link guy as well as you are, so I'm not a Wi-Fi expert. I just give the guidelines of what we need them to do. But because if you ask a network expert and a Wi-Fi expert, they know how to design for voice, but typically it's more expensive to do so. So they don't have enough arguments to actually get to design the Wi-Fi for voice. But Link is an end-user-driven product. So I've experienced that Link is a good way in order for having the customers invest in the wireless network. But still, you should do that together with a vendor that knows how to design for wireless. But what they said is that you should do like this, and this is how we do it. But then again, you need to, of course, do it right with the correct tools and the correct knowledge. So there's no quick fix. I'm sorry about that. But you have some guidelines. Okay? Any more questions? No? Well, then I thank you for your time. And let's move over here. There's some resources in the deck you can look into. There's a technical requirements for mobility. You have Brian Rix's talk on how the Link 2013 client signs in. And you also have some great blog posts by MVP Jeff Schertz. I guess a lot of you guys have been there. He had good blogs on the Link mobile client. As well as there's a good resources on the native Link two-factor authentication, both on the Nexa blog and by Jens Rasmussen, that works in Microsoft Denmark, that explains how two-factor authentication for a mobile client works. And there are some related sessions here as well, and I want to highlight the Link security, secure by design session, the SDN session, and also the quality of service and network bandwidth session. And you can watch them at channel 9 if you haven't been able to access those sessions. And I will be at Ask the Experts, which starts in some time. I'm not sure what time it is. It starts in 20 minutes. It's in the Meet Hall. And of course, you should join the Office 365 community. And you should use Channel 9 for learning. And join us at Ask the Experts. Thank you very much for your time.